Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good morning and Merry Christmas, just so we don't forget to do that, because that is right around the corner. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone. And you are correct. Christmas is here, by golly.
Yes, and my favorite day of the year, which is not Christmas, is fast approaching. In fact, this year, even my wife has been looking forward to Monday, because Monday is the longest day of the year, and it means the day afterwards we start our trek towards more daylight.
Get a little more sunshine in here, that's right.
Yeah, which means it'll be easier to wake up early in the morning. But we're not here to talk about how much sleep we don't get. We are here to talk about the market. And if you want to discuss that with us today, because you have some questions, this is live radio. We don't pre-record this. So you can call in 888-312-5757, 888-312-5757. And if you go to our website, iriradio.com is the shortcut. In the lower left-hand corner, you can register for January's. You know, I'm really skipping ahead. January's, I did it twice. January's stock market update will be on the second Saturday because of the holiday on the first
New
weekend.
Year's, sure.
But what is going to happen next year is a question that is on many people's mind. And we are going to take a shot in another couple of weeks about what we see going on. We do not have a crystal ball, but we do analyze what's happening, which is how we manage the client portfolios that we're responsible for. One of the things we know that's coming next year, or maybe hopefully before the end of this year, in one of my daily emails, I said, what I want for Christmas is a stimulus.
There we go.
We have been talking, Congress has been talking, and that's all they've been doing is talking about a stimulus. They haven't been getting one done. But they are concerned about government employee payroll. And so at least a stopgap will come by. I mean, I think that has to be done before Sunday, tomorrow. So we are going to see something, I think, this weekend. Hopefully it will be longer than a week like the last one. But when we take a look at next year, the assumption here is with the vaccine, we have now provided the catalyst for economic recovery. Because everybody will take the vaccine and the pandemic will come quickly to an end. At least that's the hope.
Sounds good. I'll vote for that. Yeah. As far as plan A goes, that'll work.
So coming out of Credit Suisse, one of their strategists has been waxing bullish on what this stimulus is going to do. In his words, it's the biggest stimulus plan ever known to man. And while I'm not sure the dollars coming out of Congress are going to be that big, cumulatively with what they've done so far this year between Congress and the Fed, I mean, it's absolutely outrageous how much debt they have incurred on our coming up generations. But financials and healthcare, which you would assume had been overpriced with speculation, both of those sectors are actually fairly cheap right now.
Looking pretty good. And his overriding point was the biggest stimulus anyone's ever seen is going to just be reopening the economies of the world. And I thought that was an interesting way of looking at the issue, and I thought it was important to recognize, as much as Wall Street and markets worldwide love stimulus, nothing will do as much as just opening economies back up and letting people go back to work. Let the machine start working again. That's going to really that's going to be the game changer. We can't just keep having a little stimulus packages and say, well, that this is going to get us through. It's not. People are crumbling, especially around the edges. And the only way to stem that tide is to get the economy open.
Well, and you mentioned the key, and that is let people work. What was generating a growing economy over the last 4 years has been the expansion of employment, particularly in the United States under President Trump's change in the status quo of how we deal with our foreign trade partners. And we brought a lot of jobs home. Apparently there was a magic wand, and he had it, and he knew where to wave it. And we got massive employment growth. Unemployment dropped below anything anybody ever dreamed was possible. We need to have people go back to work. The real question is, given all of the lockdowns that we've experienced, is whether or not, even with the vaccine, governors are going to let people go back to work anytime soon.
It's true.
And just continuing to borrow more money and say it doesn't matter, you don't need a job. Why? Because the government's going to give you money. So why work? Yeah, well, you end up with conditions like downtown Seattle. I mean, people lose hope when they can't do productive activity to take care of themselves, to be responsible for themselves, to have an opportunity to improve themselves, to have an income ladder, an opportunity ladder that they can climb and they can make progress with. That is what capitalism is all about. Socialism is lowest common denominator, so everybody suffers equally. That's not our game.
No, that's not what we're looking for. It doesn't work. It's never worked anywhere. And the only long-term solution, the only long-term plan out of the situation we're in right now is returning the economy back to the people that run it. That's the employers. Let people go back to work, and this will fade away. It will come back. And the everyone is talking about, you know, where is it going to come back? We don't know that, but we do know there will be a huge resurgence just putting everyone back to work.
But the market has had a resurgence off the March lows. I mean, the pandemic really knocked the legs out of the stool that was supporting the market at that time. Earnings continued to collapse. Prices have been rising in spite of the fact that S&P earnings have continued a two-year decline. But there is hope that these things are going to turn around at least by the second half of next year. Charlie Munger, who is Warren Buffett's very senior vice president, has addressed the current market, and he says, this is extraordinary. It's a frenzy, if you will. And because stock prices have been risen to the levels that they're at today, at least the major components of the major indices are at very high levels. And I wouldn't put this as a broad brush across the entire market, but the major components have been speculated, if you will. And the question from an academic standpoint is, things at this level historically mean that the next decade has lower than average returns.
And he believes that. Yeah, he thinks that outlook is correct, just because this has been such a fantastic run-up, especially on the NASDAQ. It's been, a heck of a ride, but it's leave it to Charlie Munger, because he's always looking ahead, but he's like, don't expect that necessarily to happen again. Even on the NASDAQ, even in the tech world, are they going to follow up a year like this year with another one just as big? Regardless of what the recovery looks like, it's time to really look around and make you know, make sure what's going on out there and don't blindly follow a belief that, well, it happened once, it's going to happen again.
And so part of his rationale is that the run-up in stocks has not been generated by any valuation of corporate profitability. It's because the Fed has been borrowing money, or printing it, if you will. We'll pass on that discussion, but we've had money pumped into the stock market on the premise that if people feel wealthy, they'll spend money. Except they're not a lot of the Americans don't own stocks, or maybe they're in their 401k, and if that goes up, it doesn't support the mortgage payment or the grocery bill or gasoline. Of course, they're not going back and forth to work very often. Mm. But the normal expenses of a monthly budget and taking care of the family doesn't come out of your 401k. So it doesn't matter how well it does, that wealth effect doesn't translate into economic stimulus. And that's created this big divide between the haves and the have-nots in the economy.
Sure, he was talking about what Apple's worth and comparing it to John D. Rockefeller's empire at his peak. And I was looking at some of those numbers, and the highest estimate for Rockefeller's entire empire was about $400 billion in today's dollars. Not then. He was a multi-billionaire then, but he only had a couple billion. He was trying to squeeze by in a couple of billion, and so here's John D. Rockefeller, the richest American that ever lived, and now his entire empire was worth $400 billion, and Apple's worth over $1 trillion by itself. So it's well over twice as big as Rockefeller's entire empire. So his point is, boy, there's been some huge expansion here in those companies, and they are really, really big right now.
Yeah, he would have been considered a pauper among the elite.
among those guys, yeah. He had just had a couple of billion dollars, and that's not in the league of what's going on these days. Apple's not the only trillion-dollar company anymore, and it's hard to wrap your head around numbers that big. But that is how big they've actually gotten. And his question is, well, does that continue? Can we support those companies at those levels? And that's another one of those only time will tell. We'll see. But it looks like most of those companies actually have real business models. The big guys, you look at Apple and Amazon and Netflix. Those guys are all huge. And Microsoft, that's a real business. They're not just living off of marketing.
Probably time to take a break.
Yeah, we're at the quarter hour. We'll go ahead and get out of here. If you do not get our Week in Review, which is our weekly email newsletter, you can sign up for that. Send us an email, help@iriradio.com. That is help@iriradio.com. Just put Week in Review in the subject line, and we need your first and last name, and you will begin receiving that this Monday. Also, don't forget to sign up for our January webinar, Saturday, January 9th, right after the show. You can sign up at iriradio.com. Just go to the webinar page, click the registration link, and you'll get an email back with a link in it. And then on the 9th, right after the show, you can click on that, and you'll be live online with us. And we are going to go through where we think the economy and the markets are, how things look, what we're doing, and we always have plenty of time to answer your questions, either about the market or the economy or individual securities that you're holding that you want a second opinion on. It's a great time to get that done. If you have a question for us this morning, give us a call at 888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Sleigh bells ring. Are you listening? In the lane, snow is glistening. A beautiful sight. We're happy tonight. Walking in a winter wonderland. Gone away.
There were times in my younger years when I didn't mind walking around in the snow, but not anymore. I just assume,
you don't look forward to that? Yeah.
I no longer look forward to that. I like to stay warmer than that situation.
There you go.
But we've been talking about the high prices, extended prices in the market, and many call this another bubble, as in 1999. But that was a three-year run that was generated by government intervention into the private market of business. How'd they do that? That's pretty easy. They regulate any and everything. Back in the mid-90s, we're looking at the clocks turning over with the millennium. And at that time, we were using DOS-based software. And the assumption was when 2000 hit, all systems using DOS would collapse. The bank vault would not open. Your computer would not operate. Military would be shut down, all because the computer clocks weren't going to turn over. And so government said, if we can regulate you, here is the mandate. You must upgrade your systems and have proven that they're going to work when the clocks tick midnight and turn into the year 2000. Nobody bothered to reset the clock on their DOS computer to 5 minutes before midnight, turn it off and start it again and see what happens.
That's way too easy. Way too easy, Don. Yeah.
If you had bothered to do that, you would have found that nothing abnormal happened. Every system still worked. But that's not good enough for government if they have an opportunity to control things. So they mandated that you go out and buy all sorts of hardware and software that you were not yet in need of, which created massive sales for hardware and software companies, particularly in the 3 years leading up to the millennium. And then it surprised everybody that in 2001 and 2002 and 2003, that technology sales were in the tank because everybody'd already bought everything they needed for several years.
It already happened. It was already done, and no one else was buying.
And in that bubble, there wasn't anybody standing around saying, hey, remember the last bubble we had, you know, when tech was like this? Because we had never had one before. Well, now we have. And so with this one, there's a lot of people saying, well, remember 99? Topped out in 2000, and then it was disaster. And we've shown you that on our webinars. And it was 2.5, almost 3 years of decline before markets began to rally once again due to Fed intervention, pumping money into the real estate market. Well, when you look at bubbles, there's actually five phases that they go through. And they are predictable phases because they are a response to human emotions, which since Adam and Eve, I don't think emotions have changed much.
No, they ring true, and they have for centuries. And you know, once again, it just shows in situations like that, in a huge bubble, it's us. We're the problem. Things get out of control, and that's we are the ones that overreact. And it's always fear and greed. It's greed on the way up and fear on the way down.
So the first phase is displacement. Some sort of process, a company, a concept comes along, and it displaces the old guard. And what comes to mind is Bill Gates in a garage kicking IBM off of their very large pedestal. I mean, IBM almost collapsed with the advent of DOS. I mean, they tried to buy it, but he was smart enough not to sell it. He licensed it, which gave him ongoing revenue from many, many sources. That's a mistake, actually, that's happening with a lot of young innovators today. They are creating displacement technology. And think of Uber, DoorDash, Airbnb. And these are displacement technologies. And many of those that have been developed this last decade, the guys have been offered what, as a young innovator, $100 million, saying, man, that sets me up for life. And they're selling. They're selling to a bigger company whose heels are getting sore because of this young buck nipping at their business model. and they go out and buy it. And then they collapse it. They integrate it and collapse it. If the guy had not sold it, he had the opportunity not to be a multi-hundred millionaire, but a billionaire, to move into a totally different economic class. That mistake has been repeated more than once. But displacement is what we need as an economy to continue to grow, to improve our standard of living, to bring costs down. Once that happens, you get expansion. People begin to adopt whatever the new technology or product is. And then people get excited about it. It moves into a euphoric phase.
And that's where things get really dangerous. That's when people begin to just completely overlook anything on the risk side of the equation, and just that's it. We have to get in. We got to stay in. We got to buy as much as we can, and it doesn't matter what else is going on in the world. And people stop looking at, could this possibly continue or not? And it just becomes, nope, we're just buying to buy, and that's when you get the real expansion of the bubble.
So with any boom on the other side of it, and there is another side, and that's when the boom goes bust, and that's when the insiders are selling, and that causes panic. The panic buying shifts to panic selling, and then you get contagion, and just as prices overshoot on the upside, they have a tendency to overshoot on the downside. And bad news spreads pretty fast, and people begin to think things will never, ever get better again. But you have to have a process to manage this stuff, and that's what we do for our clients. We have been through, we went through the tech bubble, we went through the bust, we went through the real estate bubble, and we went through the bust after that, the great financial crisis. And we're working our way through this one with the pandemic. We have learned a lot over time. Not all of it makes sense based on traditional financial training, because a lot of that stuff just says, hang on, everything will be all right in the long run, because the market always goes up. And we know that that's not always true. It doesn't always go up during the period of time that you need your money. So what do? Well, we're trying to manage risk along with making gains in the accounts. And you have to decide which one's more important. Do you want to beat the stock market? Are you willing to take significant losses along the way? They may be temporary. It may be months. It may be a couple of years of losses before you recover again. Just exactly where is your priority? Well, for us, it's a function of looking at what's going on and watching for those changes to occur that say, maybe this really doesn't make any sense and we should be a little more conservative, at least for a little while.
And we look at that based on price. We're not watching the headlines. We're not trying to decide, is this bubble over or not? Have we peaked? Is this the top? Trying to pick a market top is impossible. It can't be done. Market tops are identified looking back, and then you say, oh yeah, that was the top right there. But you never know it when you're in it, and so it's important to understand what your strategy is and what is it you're trying to do. And we try to avoid taking the big loss. That's more important than saying we're ahead of the market all the time. Because if you have fantastic returns part of the time, but you've stayed in the market the entire time, you're spending all that time making up for the money you just lost. And you're not actually moving your portfolio ahead at all. You're just trying to catch up to where you should have been. So not taking the big hit, that is much more important from our point of view than making sure you're ahead of any index you're following, that you want to stay ahead of the NASDAQ no matter what. It's much more important not to write it down, because then you're not trying to catch up again. And if you're spending all your time playing catch up, you're not moving your portfolio forward. You're not getting any closer to your goals. That's more important to us. Watch the risk.
So let's go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, let's talk about some of the indicators that we track and what we're doing to make that decision instead of guessing at something that may or may not happen. Because a guess in the market is just a 50-50 flip of the coin. And that is not management. That's not process. That is speculation.
You don't need to pay anybody for that. Everybody's got their own quarter. You can flip that and see what you want to do going forward. That's not it. But we will go ahead and take a break here at the bottom of the hour. If you have questions for us this morning, give us a call at 888-312-5757. It's 888-312-5757. And if you've not already registered for a January market update, go to iriradio.com. Go to the webinar page, click the registration link, and you'll get an email back. You'll be ready to go on January 9th. Get your questions answered about the market, what's going on out there. We'll give you a good look at where we think we are and what's going on currently, and what we're doing with client portfolios to try to protect some capital and, of course, always grow it, the amount that's available out there. Again, go to iriradio.com, head to the webinar page, and click the registration link. You are listening to Investor Resources here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Deck the halls with boughs of holly, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Tis the season to be jolly, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Don we now our gay apparel, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la.
Well, with the market, there are a lot of people who are jolly, and there are a lot of people who are suffering FOMO, fear of missing out, because they've been sitting in cash for some time. But what I mentioned in this last promo that ran, I mentioned market-generated information, or MGI. That's important. Instead of having an opinion, let's actually look at what's going on in the market to determine how we structure a portfolio. We don't structure portfolios based on 90-year average returns and assume everything will be okay. We want to know what's going on now. That's what's important. What happened during the 30s or 50s is irrelevant and we believe is bad policy. So what do we look at? Well, there's a lot of papers research papers that have been written about the market and risk analysis and structuring your portfolio. One of those, which was introduced to a number of years ago, segregates data into macro data to take a big picture of what's going on with the market. And so we have five sets, combinations of indicators. Three of them are short term. One, we want to know, should we be long or short in the S&P 500? And we use the exchange-traded funds to track that and keep track of which one should we be in. Is the market have a trend that is continuing to go up, or has it reversed so that we should be protecting our capital because of a downtrend that's developing? The next short term is, let's take a look at bonds. Long-term bonds are where investors go when they're scared. They're worried about market valuations, and so they want some return. It's not very much, but they move to long-term bonds. If they're moving to short-term bonds, reducing the long exposure, that money's often being pumped into stocks. So that's a long versus short-term. And then we look at utilities versus the market. Utilities are traditionally a safer haven than being invested in the broad S&P. They're kind of a bond alternative. They don't have the same volatility characteristics, but they're an indicator of investor fear. And when investors are fearful and piling into utilities, that means they're exiting their other equity exposure. And is the economy, longer term, is the economy doing well? Want an easy indicator? We look at lumber prices, commodities. When lumber's in demand and prices are continuing to rise, that means contractors have work. When they have work, they're employing people. When they're employing people, households have income, and that money gets spent in the economy. So looking 6 to 9 months out, lumber prices have been rising, and they are a positive indicator for this next year. And then we look at, should you be leveraged in the market? Now, we don't use leverage, but we use this as an indicator of risk management. And if leverage is a viable alternative for being in the S&P, then we want to be exposed with our unleveraged positions. We know that the trend is our friend and we're still on the right side. That's market-generated information instead of guessing what's going to happen next year because somebody thinks financial stocks are very undervalued. And they may be, but they are not going, banks aren't going to earn a lot of money till interest rates get much higher. So they can stay undervalued all of next year.
Or even longer. And the worst part is that if your advisor handed you that pie chart and said, here, this is what we're going to do with your money, that means not only do they not know what's going on or what they think is coming up, they don't care. It doesn't matter. You're positioned over 80-year averages, and you're going to stay there no matter what, unless you go back in and change the answers on your risk-return questionnaire. You're going to get whatever comes along. It really is just buy and hope and sit and take it. And they don't make any determination about, are we doing well or not? That's not part of what they're looking at. It's like, nope, we're going to allocate your portfolio based on these long-term averages, and that's where you're going to stay. That's a fairly dangerous thing to be doing, and it's the most common way that portfolios get managed in the United States.
So you need to understand how the decisions are going to be made. And what you just referred to, Perry, modern portfolio theory, basically says we're not going to make decisions different because you just told us what your personal risk situation is, your evaluation of how you're going to respond to things, and you want lower risk. Well, the way you get lower risk is you put less money in stocks. That's it. Get out of the stock market and you get rid of risk. Well, you get rid of that risk anyway. But you want to have a portfolio. You do want to own stocks. You just don't want to own stocks that go down. There, well, you've got the secret. We identified it.
Never thought of that before, Don. Yeah, that's good. So.
But the problem is, everything goes up and down, at least in the short term, and eventually they all go down deeply in the long run. They're somewhere it's going to really drop, and that's what you need to avoid to preserve wealth. Perry, you mentioned this just a minute ago. It's more important to not lose large amounts of money than it is to chase a speculative asset. Now, there are times, if you can tolerate a great deal of downside, then you can just buy and hold and hang on to something. And Tesla's a classic case. I mean, this year it's had a phenomenal run. It also dropped 60% during the year.
Is that okay with you? Yeah. How do you feel about that?
Well, as long as it's not a real big position. I mean, we own some exchange-traded funds that own Tesla. So when the drop comes, it was diversified and it, yeah, it was noticeable, but it wasn't enough to cause panic. And some people who don't pay attention, you know, they don't pay attention, so they didn't even know it happened. They survived it without any difficulty. But it's our position that paying attention to market-generated information helps make reasoned decisions about whether we should be in or out of the market. And applied to different sectors, which ones we should own and which ones we should avoid. Because everything doesn't go up at the same time. We have what's called a business cycle. Some of that cycle is played around with, messed up by government intervention from time to time. And you should not ignore it. But modern portfolio theory does. Because governments come and go, I guess it's actually political parties come and go in power in our country. At least that's the assumption. But assuming that the return you got last year is going to be the return that you get next year and 10 years out, that's, you can't validate that. That is an assumption, but it's not market-generated information. What's going on right now in your portfolio? How are you going to make decisions? And when the biotech stocks had their crash earlier, how do you get out of them? Or do you just hang on to them and you assume at some point in time, there'll be another pandemic and biotech will be in favor again.
and that's what happens most of the time. If you're in a pie chart portfolio, that's what happens. You're just going to own that stuff. And it doesn't matter what's going on in the market right now. It doesn't matter if things are going up or going down. You're going to be stuck in the same position because no one's making a decision based on current market conditions. It's deemed unimportant. And we think that's backwards. We think you should be doing everything you can to adapt to the current market environment, because things change so rapidly now, and they change so much so quickly that you can't ignore that. You can get hurt quite badly on the downside, and you can't just say, well, I've got an unlimited amount of time, and that's going to bail me out. It's not true. You know, we don't have time frames that long. We're not going to be around for another 80 years to let this all work out for us. So it doesn't make sense to take that big loss and then try to make sure that it's going to come back. Not try to make sure, just hope it comes back. It's just buying hope, and it's just not good enough. You don't have to do that.
So I just mentioned biotech, and if you go look at a chart on one of the biotech ETFs, you're going to see that recently they're rising. You say, well, why are you talking about them falling? Well, if we go back to the fourth quarter of 18, they're down almost 40%. If that's okay with you, then just, you know, buy and hold. They had a big collapse again in February. But if we go back to the early part of this year, because of the pandemic, there were a lot of biotech stocks in the market. There were over 600 different biotech companies that were being traded, a lot of which on Robinhood and other phone apps by inexperienced investors. Now, over 400 of them are not delisted, but they're trading on the pink sheets. The prices are so cheap and the volume is so low that you really have to call a broker to get them. And nobody does that anymore.
No, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. But that does happen to, especially when you're dealing with individual stocks. There's just no way to say, well, I'm going to put this in my portfolio and leave it there because this is a great story. It's like, it doesn't matter how good the narrative is. You have to track the prices. And that is what is going to let you know whether or not this is a good idea to have it in your portfolio. And more importantly, should I keep it in my portfolio? There's a time for everything to go. Nothing should be in your portfolio forever. Things just change too much. You can't just sit back and say, well, I'm just going to let this make it run, and I'm going to keep it no matter what. No matter what is too much these days. Things move too rapidly. They change too much, and it can cost you your retirement. It can cost you your whatever your goal was that you were investing for. It can take that away from you for a longer time than you've got left to let it come back. And that's the biggest problem. And we are right up against our final break of the morning here. We have a whole segment left. If you have questions for us this morning, feel free to give us a call at 888-312-5757. That is 888-312-5757. And get registered for our January market update coming up on January 9th. Go to iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. Get to the webinar page, give the registration link a click, and you're going to get an email back with a link in it. And on the 9th, just after the show's over, give that a click, and you're going to be live and online. We're going to have to take a look at the economy, the markets, where things are right now, what we're doing in the market currently, and plenty of time to get your questions answered. So if you have any particular security that's giving you a headache, you'd like a second opinion on that, go ahead and register and come to that webinar. It'll be well worth your time. If you can't stay and watch it all, you're going to get a replay link so you can actually watch it as often as you'd like on your own time. Again, just go to iriradio.com. We have one full segment remaining, so stay with us. We'll be right back.
Do you hear what I hear?
Said the night wind to the little lamb. Do you see what I see?
Do you see what I see?
Way up in the sky, little lamb. Do you see what I see?
Do you see what I see?
A star, dancing in the night.
This is Don Creech, and we have Max on the line.
Thank you. Good morning to you. I have a question.
This says you're in central Nebraska. Is that right?
Yeah, visiting. visiting family. Normal live in Washington. We live in the Olympia area, though.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, because we don't normally get Nebraskans calling in, but it caught my attention.
Yeah, I'll bet. I have a question. It's getting to the end of the year. I find out that instead of waiting to March 5th or till April 15th, it has to be done by the end of the year. Question on basically converting money in mutual funds, IRA and SEP mutual funds, into Roth accounts. I've heard phrases like recharacterization and Roth conversion thrown around, and just wondering if you can shed some light on the process that needs to be done.
Well, you're asking a very timely question, and you are running out of time to save some money because the CARES Act this year waived penalties. Perry, we did this research for a client just this week. Perry, you want to answer his question here about why he should try to get this done before the end of the year?
Well, the transition from a traditional IRA to a Roth is a little more complicated in that you are going to have to pay taxes on that money currently. So there are, you know, that tax question is a big one, because there was no change there. So you're going to have to, if you take it out of a traditional IRA and you recharacterize it into a Roth, you're going to be taxed on that money this year. Then it doesn't get taxed as it comes out of the Roth as things currently stand now. But the caveat there is, you know, you didn't used to get taxed on your Social Security either, and now you are. And there's always the fear that once there's enough money in Roth accounts, that our friends in Washington won't be able to keep their hands off that either. So there's no guarantee that that money's going to stay untaxed. So you do have to decide what you think about that, what you think about the possibility of that being taxed in the future. And you have to have adjusted gross income below $100,000 to convert that.
Sure. Okay.
And if those things apply, then you also make an assumption. If I can still get it done this year, and you're running out of time because wherever you have it custodied, they may have difficulty getting that done for you before December 31. Decide whether this year tax rate is lower than what you would pay in the future under a Biden administration who has threatened to raise taxes.
Yeah, I have a sneaking suspicion. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. It would be just, as far as paying taxes, it would be just like what is done with a normal RMD, required minimum disposition, I guess it is.
Distribution, correct.
Distribution, yeah.
Except that instead, you wouldn't get the money. It would just go from the traditional, be recharacterized as a Roth, but then you have to pay taxes on the balance, whatever that happens to be. And in general, if you cannot pay taxes for that with money from outside of the IRA, the hit is too large to the account to make it worthwhile, because you're going to reduce your balance by whatever you're going to end up having to take out to pay the taxes. And so if you can pay it with outside money, it can be a better idea. If you're going to have to pay those taxes out of the existing IRA funds, then it's probably something you need to look at really closely and run the numbers specifically to you and see if that's going to work for you.
Yeah.
Plus,
yeah,
once you get it in the Roth on a conversion, you need to leave it there for 5 years. If you touch it and take it out, then you have a different problem.
Yeah. No perfect place to stick the money, is there? Always.
Not perfect. Yeah, that's correct. you got it, Max. Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Thank you so very much. I really appreciate your wisdom.
Thanks for calling.
Advice.
You bet.
Okay.
Well, we're glad to have you out there in the audience, especially to be so dedicated to travel halfway across the country and still listen to us. So Merry Christmas to you, Max, and to you and your family. Have a great time together.
Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Okay.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye now.
Let's go back and talk. We're talking about market-generated information. The next question is always, when is the right time to sell? Is there a right time? Well, under modern portfolio theory, you don't have to worry about it.
Don't sweat it. Yeah, don't ever sell.
Because you're in here for the long haul. That's why you're using long-term average returns, because you just want to get an average return over the next 40 or 50 years that you're going to live, right? Yeah, well, by the time most people are getting serious about money, they don't have that much more time, but they have a lot more than people were assuming when modern portfolio theory was in its early stages of broad adoption. So when do you sell? Well, let's go back to market-generated information. That's what we look at. In this last segment, I went through five sets of indicators that we use, which are keeping us in the market at the present time. When those turn negative, it's going to be time to consider reducing your exposure, or if they all turn negative very quickly, just to get out of the market and wait for whatever bad news is developing to unfold. It's market-generated information. Dealing with the here and now, not the yesterday and history. It's the here and now that your account is invested in. And that's how you're going to respond to the market emotionally. So, people are not good at timing the market, and we do not time the market.
Mm-hmm.
Especially on the way out. I mean, your gut starts taking over. I mean, if let's just take a quick example, and you did a lot of research and you bought Amazon. But now that you've bought Amazon, it's no longer that Amazon is a good, strong company generating profits and has a ton of cash. It's now my Amazon.
And now it's very important, and the price you paid for it becomes very important, and that begins to change the way you look at things and the way you make decisions. That's why it's so important to have external processes in place, because no one who's a human being can avoid those feelings. You cannot avoid those feelings of, wow, I'm underwater, I'm losing money, what should I do? Now the pressure's really on, and that's when people start to make mistakes. Other side is just as bad. You know, I've made a ton of money here. When should I bail out? When should I lighten this up? When should I make a move here? And that's when you really start to make bad decisions, when the pressure's on. And the pressure's always on when you've got money in the game. That's when you need that process based on data and not on your emotions to help you get through those times.
Yeah, and your emotions basically are generating the answers to the risk questionnaire, whether you do it online because you're on a company's website, Schwab or Fidelity or BlackRock or whoever, or whether you're sitting across the table from a financial advisor and they're asking you questions. How do you feel about it? How much loss are you willing to take before you panic? 20%, willing to lose 20% of your account? How about 30? You don't want to lose any. Well, that's going to change the way the model is set up, and the more conservative you are, the less they're going to put into stocks, which reduces your long-term gain potential, because stocks generally create better returns than bonds. And real estate today has not been adjusted in portfolios for the collapse that is occurring in rents and occupancy in commercial properties.
That's a rather significant shift that's underway out there, and it has not played out. It has not played through yet, because there's a moratorium on moving people out that can't pay their rents, and everybody's kind of taking a pass right now. But that's all going to change at the end of the year, and things are going to begin to firm up, and we're going to see where are we here exactly in the real estate market, and it's not going to be pretty.
But the average return on real estate is not going to change for years, because it will take years for the next 4 or 5 years of downward adjustments in real estate pricing and rents to be reflected significantly.
It's a big number.
That's market-generated information that we pay attention to, and why we do not own real estate in our current portfolios. We're coming up at the end of the show. You want to talk to us during the week, 800-317-9119, 800-317-9119. Have a Merry Christmas with your family. We will, Lord willing, we'll be back next weekend. Stay safe. Merry Christmas.